Sam Amick joins us following the great Rick Barry as we get ready for Jazz and Warriors tonight. And Sam, to begin, I thought LeBron looked pretty good after 8 days off. Should we expect that from the Warriors tonight?
We shall see. They'll be lucky if they look that good. I mean, my goodness, they dropped 30-plus in the first quarter. They're out and running. They ended up actually playing some defense. You know, I wouldn't be shocked, though, to see the Warriors look pretty sharp. You know, they look fantastic in that closeout game against Portland with, you know, Durant obviously coming back and looking good and Steph looking like Steph again. I mean, it feels like they've got their rhythm, and it's a good problem to have this time of year when you're having to figure out how to handle 8 days of rust and rest, you know, and these guys are pros. I think they'll be fine.
We've been talking about Draymond Green today, and could he be prone for some foul trouble in this game because of the way Utah moves the ball, is comfortable in the half-court set, and they got a couple of bigs who play really well with their back to the basket.
Yeah, no, that's a really good point, and I think you're probably right. He's got to be careful. The fouls might come, and not only the way they play and the personnel they have, but the fact that they're a chippy team, you know, a little bit more than people realize. Now, I remember a couple weeks ago when the Rockets and Warriors played and Draymond got upset for Harden pinching his stomach and the little things that go on that we don't always see. When I watched this Jazz Clippers first round series, there was a lot of that. I mean, Joe Ingles in particular is a dogged defender who did a great job on J.J. Redick. You know, and Rodney Hood did a really good job as well. And some of their vets, the Boris Diaz of the world. I mean, these guys, they're going to pull out all the stops to try to get whatever edge they can on the Warriors. So I think you might have a little bit of that chippiness potentially too.
Did you like the way they closed out the Clippers in that game? Because the Clippers are without Blake Griffin, but that's a tough place to go in against Chris Paul, the way they've been playing. How important was that win for the Jazz building momentum coming into this Warrior series?
No, it was big, and I think now the problem they're going to have, and maybe they get over it, but it's when you have a team like that that has built slowly, that had not been in the playoffs since 2012, you know, hadn't been in the second round since 2010, then it's what you're battling psychologically, I think, is the excitement and the elation of surviving the first round and then having to recalibrate, I guess, and take on this task, because they really did seem that meant the world to them to win that first round series. I was in the Jazz locker room, talked to Gordon Hayward, saw him embracing Quinn Snyder and having, you know, a really nice moment. You know, it was a very different vibe than a team like the Warriors that obviously fully expected to just kind of barrel through their first round opponent.
I mean, it's too early to talk about it, but I got to bring it up. Is Hayward gone? I mean, the Celtics want him. They have all those pieces and the ability to make the move work as a free agent. And I think Hayward loves playing in Salt Lake and loves the fans there, but I don't know how they're going to keep them long term. What impression do you have?
Well, that's why I think that series was huge. I mean, whatever chance they have of keeping him, they had to win that first round series. I mean, if you would have lost to the Clippers without Blake Griffin, then if you're Gordon and you see what the Celtics have in front of you, then, you know, how do you not go do that? Now, it's interesting. Gordon has always downplayed the connection between him and Brad Stevens from Butler. And Brad has done the same. It's been quite some time. You're talking about a long time ago that those guys were together. I mean, Gordon came into the league in 2010. I think he likes Utah. I think like every other guy in free agency, like Warriors fans saw with Kevin Durant, you know, guys sometimes leave good situations if they see a better one. But Gordon's situation is huge. And then there's got to be a correlation between him and George Hill also, because George is also up, and probably more rumblings about George potentially leaving than there is Gordon. So a tricky offseason for Utah.
Sam Amick's our guest. What happened to the Spurs? How could that happen from a Greg Popovich coach team last night?
I don't know. I mean, guys I look at, obviously LaMarcus Aldridge was terrible. Danny Green has become a guy that you can almost always rely on for the Spurs to bring that competitiveness and that fire and that intensity. And even going back to that game in San Antonio in the regular season against the Warriors, when I remember Danny still, you know, ripped, I think you and I probably talked about it, just ripped the ball out of Draymond's hands at the jump and set the tone for the way they're going to compete. And Danny didn't do that yesterday. And, you know, Tony Parker, you know, had a decent first round series, but he was, you know, an absolutely invisible player yesterday. Very surprising. Kawhi struggled. And the more surprising part to me was how their struggle sustained all the way through. They looked so disjointed deep into the game, you know, way past that time when you assume that after a couple of timeouts, after a first quarter break, you know, when you have Greg Popovich, arguably, you know, the best coach of all time, one of them, in your ear that you would find a way to find your game again, and they just never did.
In the Celtics series against the Wizards, Boston won 123-111. John Wall had 20 points and 16 assists. But I watched about half of that game, and I couldn't believe how Isaiah Thomas was torching him, absolutely embarrassing him off the dribble there. And I said, well, John Wall's a hell of a player, and he can D up from time to time. Is he lethargic on defense, or is Isaiah Thomas that good when he gets in rhythm?
I mean, I'd probably just want to give Isaiah credit, and I kind of love that he did it because, you know, in the spotlight front and center all season long, we obviously talked about MVP in the context of James Harden, Russell Westbrook, even Kawhi Leonard, LeBron James. I'd be willing to bet that Isaiah remembers the fact that there was also kind of a second-level debate about Isaiah Thomas and John Wall, and which guy, if you had to, like, at our place, for example, we had a top five MVP ranking every single week. And it was always a matter of, you know, which guy was more worthy this season, Isaiah Thomas or John Wall. And the X factor for a lot of people was that John plays far better defense than Isaiah does. And so here Isaiah comes out and just, you know, shows all of us that, you know, maybe his D is not quite as good as we think it is, and just takes care of it in the first game. I mean, they're down 16-0, come all the way back, losing teeth, you know, doing what he did. I mean, it was a heck of a performance, and obviously a guy that I feel like we always need to keep mentioning. This grief doesn't go away after a week. This guy is still dealing with the loss of his sister, and that's not something that's going to go away anytime soon.
Where does your NBA travels take you in the next couple of weeks?
Kind of a chaotic trip. Officially the first road trip of the playoffs when I depart without knowing when I'm coming back. That's when you know it's the postseason. I'm doing Warriors tonight. I'll be making the drive down, and then San Antonio tomorrow for game two, and then off to Houston for game three. And then from there, I think I'd have to look at, you know, the landscape and see who's winning and where I should go.
Thank you, Sam. Travel safe. We'll talk to you soon.
All right, JT. Thanks, man.
Sam Amick from USA Today.